is how we will build a more successful and a more powerful country. Their vision boils down to a single sentence. I got mine. The rest of you are on your own. Progressives have a different view. We believe we must invest together in the things we cannot build alone. And we believe in rules for markets so that we have a level playing field for our economy. That's it. Now, Republicans claim they believe in markets, but as anyone will tell you, a market without rules is not a market. It's the place where the most powerful come to hammer on the least powerful. Progressives understand that markets are like football, that every game needs rules and a referee with a whistle to enforce those rules. Without rules and a ref, it isn't football, it's a mugging. That's the big picture, and that's why I'm running for the United States Senate. So these competing visions of America are playing out right now in Washington, and all across this country. The Republican voting record, and the voting record of my Republican opponent, Scott Brown, make this competition clear. I'll mention just four examples of how the Romney-Brown vision is put directly into policy. When some of us were working to rein in Wall Street, the Republicans were fighting regulation tooth and nail. Scott Brown personally held the reforms hostage as he negotiated to weaken the rules and to give the big banks a $19 billion break. Scott Brown and his Republican opponents, or his Republican buddies, voted against funding for summer jobs and voted twice to let the interest rate on student loans double. Just this week, Scott Brown and his Republican buddies voted for the second time against equal pay for equal work. And just a few months ago, he co-sponsored a law to let employers block access to birth control and routine cancer screenings on health insurance. And Scott Brown and his Republican buddies voted to limit the EPA's authority and repeatedly voted to give billions in subsidies to big oil companies. Now, if you have any doubt about where the Romney-Brown Republicans stand, just consider this. The Republican nominee, Mitt Romney, has said that he would repeal all financial reform. The Republican nominee, Mitt Romney, said that people who are concerned about income inequality are just envious. The Republican nominee, Mitt Romney, said corporations are people. No, Mitt, corporations are not people. People have hearts. They have kids. They get jobs. They get sick. They love. They cry. They dance. They live and they die. Learn the difference. And yet, learn this. We don't run this country for corporations. We run it for people. We are progressives, and we stand up for people. We stand for families. We believe in making investments in education and in building a future for our kids. We stand for jobs. We believe in putting people to work to rebuild a transportation system and investing in clean energy. We stand for working people. We believe in the right to unionize and in collective bargaining. We stand for expanding equality and opportunity for all Americans. Equal pay for equal work, marriage equality, civil rights, and justice. Small businesses, and for the millions of people who work every day to build a better future. And we stand for accountability and a level playing field, so no one steals your purse on Main Street or your pension on Wall Street. Because real people are getting hammered, and they're counting on me to stand up for them. And let me be clear, I am not backing down. But I can't do this alone, and that's where you come in. I need the people of Netroots Nation. I'm counting on you for your help. We're all counting on you for your help. The president is counting on you for your help. But I want something more than winning an election. I want to change the national conversation. I want real change. It's up to us to put the wind in our own sails. With your support, I know you can do this. Are you ready to do this?
I must say that There are millions of people who are being helped by this healthcare law, and we have not done as good a job as we could, and that's where you all come to begin. The power of NARUS is amazing, because you did that when we dealt with the Susan G. Komen. Remember that? How you mobilized everybody, and they, within a day, they had already decided, okay, they're going to keep funding Planned Parenthood. So the mobilization of the education is, I think, what's key, because healthcare costs in this country are not going to go down unless we do the kinds of changes and continue to push for the kinds of reforms that will really enable everyone in our country to have healthcare. That is a right.
I just wanted to follow up. Since you were in Congress and you saw how acrimonious it was, it will be an issue if the Supreme Court does strike it down. Do you think it's wise for Congress to take this up again?
I think that we need to, because there are millions of people in our country who otherwise would be totally left bare. 40 million people in our country without any kind of health care. So it's not an issue that is going to go away. I think that we need the kind of focused leadership that will continue to bring this to the fore. I am hopeful that this Supreme Court is not going to do a 5-4 decision on the Affordable Care Act. I'm hopeful that this court is going to say this is so important and it has to do with the powers of some fundamental powers of Congress to effect changes that protect the health, safety, and welfare of our people. And it should not be a 5-4 decision, because if it is, then what that says to me is it's a political, ideologically motivated decision.
Talk to a voter who thinks it would be a good idea to allow insurance companies to say that they won't insure my friend Ellen, who is 10 and recovering from leukemia. I have yet to talk to a voter who thinks it's a good idea to let insurance companies discriminate against women who have recovered from breast cancer. I have yet to talk to a voter who thinks it's a good idea to let the insurance companies profit enormously from a captive audience while we have no checks on their behavior. When we talk about what's actually in the Affordable Care Act, people support it, and that's what we have to do.
It's time to turn to the minimum wage. There is a proposal being circulated by some House Democrats to push the minimum wage from $7.25 an hour, what it currently is, to $10 an hour. Be the first such increase in 3 years. Congress said a fight is not needed, and there are Democratic leaders in Congress who have not yet really weighed in and signed on to this. Just wanted to know where you stand on this, and if you think it would be wise for Democrats to push more for the minimum wage in the 2012 elections.
Well, so Washington State has the highest minimum wage in the country, and our economy thrives because of it. I think we should be able to
tell me that they're concerned about the most. Let's get our economy.
And the status of women in that country is traditionally very, very low. What we've found in other parts of the world that are similar culturally is that economically empowering women, doing things like micro-lending programs, giving them cell phones so they can communicate with each other and become economic agents in their households, making sure that the television portrayals that people are watching are empowering to women, do a tremendous amount to change the outcomes. And what we really want is a functional society in Afghanistan that protects and humanizes everyone there, including women. We'll get there by helping them change their culture, not with drug rates.
I don't think we make these changes through war. I think we make these changes through investment in people, and it's true in Afghanistan, and it's true in other parts of the world. We make investments in women, and when we do that, we make investments in families and investments in countries.
So eternal vigilance, and we need to to let people who have the kind of perspective that we have and that you have. Elections matter. We have to mobilize our people, get out the vote, because with Citizens United out there trying to do it and all the voter suppression that's going to happen in all of our races, we need to energize and mobilize our people so that they know what's at stake in this election.
So how can you respond to people who say that part of the reason that women make less is because of the personal choices that they make?
We already know that that's not the case. We already know that there are example after example of women who do the same job as men and who are not accorded equal pay. And you know, that's what the Lady Ledbetter law was all about. And in fact, I just saw another piece where Michelle Obama was talking about Barack Obama's grandmother, who was paid, you know, far less for doing the kind of work. So it goes on in our country. We know this.
So if people really believe that it's about the personal choices that women are making, they shouldn't object to a law that says, hey, but for those who are doing the same job, equal pay for equal work. When they fight us on equal pay for equal work, it's because they know it's not just because of personal choices that women are making.
How would you respond to many Republicans who oppose some of this legislation saying that it hurts businesses, it's unnecessary, unnecessary regulations?
It's unnecessary if you're the guy making a dollar when the women are making 77 cents on the dollar. Yeah, I got it. The necessary argument, though, is one that really gets me. You know, there are millions of women across this country who support themselves, who support their children, millions of two-income families. They need to know that if they do the same job, they get the same pay. It's a bedrock economic issue for us, and it is a bedrock justice issue for us.
Following up on this war on women theme, there's a new Kaiser Family Foundation poll that finds only 3 in 10 women believe there is a, quote, wide-scale effort to limit women's reproductive health choices and services, such as abortion, family planning, and contraception. It largely breaks down that more liberals believe this is true, fewer conservatives do. I just wanted to get your thoughts on what you think of this data and why there was such a disparity between the two sides.
I'm sorry, what was the percentage?
It's about 3 in 10 women believe that there is essentially a war with reproductive rights.
It's so clear that there is this all-out frontal assault on reproductive rights that I think that part of it is that maybe people aren't paying attention to it. Do they not watch Rachel Maddow? But truly, you know, part of it is an education issue, and then sometimes it takes something being taken away to wake people up, and I hope that we're not going to have to wait to that point. But believe me, throughout the country, state after state has passed hundreds and hundreds of laws already on the books that make it tougher for a woman to exercise that choice, to the point where some of them have to go to another state in order to access just regular health care.
You know, I think 2 points around this on why the data may come out this way. One may be that a lot of women believe in 2012 it simply cannot be true that women, we can't pass a law for equal pay for equal work, that women can't have access to birth control and other reproductive freedoms. They say, my God, this is 2012. Are you kidding me? And so I think that may be part of what's going on. I think the second part of what's going on is this is really about how many of our political conversations go forward. I think of the Blunt Amendment. The Blunt Amendment was straightforward. It was about empowering employers and insurance companies to decide not to cover birth control. I mean, did anyone miss that? That's what it was really about. But you listen to all of the Republican spin around it, and it was about 100 other things. It was not about birth control, it was about religious liberty, it was about freedom, it was about opportunity, you know, it was about everything else. And this is really a big part of what I think has happened to political dialogue. The reality, the core, has gone to a very bad place. But the conversation, the noise, the wind is all somewhere else. That's why I say about these elections, it's not just about sending people to Congress. It really and truly is about changing the conversation. That's the only way we're going to get real change. That's the only way we're going to change.
Yeah. yes, that's a really good way to frame the impact of Citizens United that is going to be getting underway for progressive candidates, pro-women, pro-choice candidates to be defeated in the polls. And frankly, we're really seeing Citizens United play out in this election cycle. What it says to me is that the Supreme Court, having left us very little room, I did vote for disclosure in the House, left us very little room. I've come to the conclusion that we really need to push for a constitutional amendment. And this is yet another way that the kind of grassroots support we want to mobilize. I think without that, we're not going to be able to pass a constitutional amendment. You know, Equal Rights Amendment, Hawaii was the first state to ratify that. We didn't have all of you then. I think if we did, maybe we would have ratified that.
We do clearly need a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. I am quite confident corporations are not people. But we also, in the short term, in order to have any chance of having that constitutional amendment, in order to have any chance of disclosure, are going to need two things from all of you and everyone you can talk to. One, you have to talk to your friends and neighbors about politics and candidates and things that matter. Because Karl Rove will drown us out on the airwaves, and the only way for us to combat that is for people to be talking to their friends and neighbors. And the second thing is, I can almost guarantee you that in the general election, Karl Rove will be spending money against all three of us up there on stage, and we are going to need your help. Elizabeth has done an amazing job of raising millions of dollars in small contributions from ordinary Americans. That is how we can take back our voices and take back our country.
We've talked about getting more women's voices in Congress and reports that has, but do women work together at all differently? I've heard this from some women senators, that when they're in the room with other Republican women, they get along better, things go better. I just wanted to get your thoughts, on how, and if you think more women in Congress will perhaps lead to more bipartisanship and things getting done.
Definitely. I tell the story of when I was first elected to the legislature in Hawaii, there were only 8 members at that time who were women out of 51 in the House. And some of us got together and said, let's form a bipartisan caucus. And the guys who were the running the place said, oh, you don't want to do that. Why do you want to be divisive? And then we noticed that we were not able to pass a lot of legislation that would support families. I wanted to push for changing our sexual assault law, so the very next time I got reelected 2 years later, we formed a bipartisan caucus, and guess what? Bill after bill, and also because women work in a cooperative way, we brought in the community of advocates, and we were able to pass law after law, because by that time, the guys that did not want to be the ones who were against the women's package. It works. And I've also had the opportunity to do these five-round campaigning with Elizabeth and some of the others who are running. You know that there are 5 challenger women who are running, me from Hawaii, Elizabeth from Massachusetts, Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, Shelley Berkeley from Nevada, and Tammy Bowman from Wisconsin. When we get elected, we will be the first woman to be elected to the U.S. Senate from each of our respective states. We already get along. So when people see the dynamics, Elizabeth, isn't it great? People can envision, here are women who are going to be able to work together and move the ball and get the agenda going on behalf of the people of our country in ways that we haven't seen.
If we want to talk about the status of women, the fact that we
pitch for exactly the opposite direction. And that's also, if you get yourself in a position to run for the United States Senate or the United States House of Representatives, and you're a woman, believe me, you've learned how to fight for what you believe in. I've lived for a long time in the world where in commercial law and money law, dealing with Wall Street and Wall Street issues in both the academic world and in Washington, in which, let me put it politely, there was never a line in the ladies' room. But you know, what that does is it makes you decide that you're going to find out what's in your own heart. You're going to ask yourself, why am I out here doing this? And that's what gives you the real determination to make the kind of change you need to make.
Yeah, that's the new one.